Hey team, welcome to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast, the podcast where we actually explore the minds of leaders from all around the agriculture and agribusiness space about what it takes to lead intentionally in this industry today. My friends, if there's some value in here for you today, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast, share this with someone who needs to hear the message of what it takes to be intentional. Let's get into the show. All right, you guys, welcome back to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast. I am graced by Mr. Mike Howell today. He is the man of the Dirt Podcast, an economics podcast. And I encourage you guys to go check this out. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate you being thanks a lot, Mark. I appreciate you inviting me today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Glad to be on here with you, man. So, hey, I want to get right into it and start off with the first question. Everybody gets this one at the start of the show, Mike. So what does it mean for you to be intentional?
Hey, you know, Mark, that's an interesting word. And thinking about this a little bit, I've got 7 kids and they're all pretty close in age range there. And they're starting to get out of this stage now, but, One of the big things they always come to me, Dad, so-and-so did this and he did it on purpose. And that's what I think of when I think of intentional. It's something that you have to do, but you have to do it on purpose. And not only doing it on purpose, you have to do it with a purpose.
Yeah, that is a great analogy. I think about the same thing as you're talking about that with my kids, and we have half a dozen of them, and most of them are adults now. So we're not solving little kid problems, but by golly, that is, you're doing it on purpose. That means you had to want to do it.
That's right. There's always a problem to solve. The problems change, but there's always a problem to solve. So
that's right. That's right. So how does that play into podcasting? You know, I mean, this is, you're the first other podcaster that I brought on the show. So this is kind of fun. We can talk about this just a little bit. A lot of attention that goes into creating a show like this. And I don't know that I really knew it before I got into it, how much work this was going to be. But I did it intentionally. I did it on purpose. And now here I am. So how does that play into your show?
You know, I had no idea what I was doing when they asked me if I would be the host of the Dirt. It was kind of an idea that sprang up out of COVID. We were trying to reach people and get information out there. And we decided this would be a good way to do it. And I decided to do it. And we first off started talking about doing it once a month. And I said, you know, that's really not enough to keep people interested. We need to do it on a regular basis and get something out there for them to be coming back to. And we finally settled on once a week. And so far it's been really good, but I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to call to be a guest. And we just kind of started flying by the seat of our pants, but I knew I had to get an episode out every week and had to have it ready to go and be released every Tuesday morning. But, you know, so far it's gone really well. We've been able to get a guest every week, and we record these from March through November. We take a break after Thanksgiving and enjoy Christmas a little bit and then pick it back up after the first of the year. But, learned an awful lot doing these. I think I may learn as much from them as the listeners do, but something I really enjoyed, kind of had to step out of my comfort zone to start doing these.
Yeah, you bet. What is The Dirt about?
The Dirt is an agronomic podcast. We talk about anything and everything related to agronomy, soil fertility, anything to do with agriculture. We're trying to provide research-based information to our growers. We'll also talk about the weather from time to time. We've got a weather expert within Nutrien that comes on and gives us both long-term and short-term weather information. We've got an economist that comes on and talks about the global markets and what we can expect in terms of commodity prices and fertilizer prices in the future. So a lot of different aspects that we cover there.
Okay. All right. Well, you guys go check out The Dirt, an economics podcast, which I'm going to start listening to this a little bit more as well, because I'm finding, you know, we do a lot of work even as a leadership training company with people that work in agronomy. It's just helpful for me to know and be more knowledgeable about what's going on in your world. So when you're not podcasting, Mike, you're an agronomist, right? If I understand right, if I remember from our first conversation.
That's right. I'm covering basically the eastern third of the United States in a tech service role. I do trainings for our customers. work hand in hand with growers if they have some questions, how to use our products more effectively. Do a lot of research, work with our university cooperators and coordinate our research trials on new products and existing products.
Got it. So what is the, what crops primarily are you addressing?
We cover any crops that are grown, in our region. I'm from the South. I live in South Mississippi and I grew up working cotton. That's one of my specialties, but, I also work in, corn, soybeans, do a lot of work in forages. At one time, I was a peanut specialist with Mississippi State, so have a pretty good background in peanut production as well.
Okay. You got to tell me, what's something that I wouldn't know about cotton? And this is not going to be hard because I grew up in Minnesota. So it's as far away from cotton country as you can get. So tell me something. What's a basic learner need to understand about cotton production?
Cotton production is very tricky because the cotton plant is actually a perennial crop. It wants to carry out its life cycle over multiple years, but we grow it as an annual crop and terminate its growth at the end of the season in order to harvest it. So we're managing a perennial crop as it is an annual, and that makes management kind of tricky sometimes.
You got me right there. That's a thing I did not know. I did not know that cotton was a perennial.
Yeah, if it's grown wild around the equator, it can actually live for 30 or 40 years, get as big as a tree.
Really? And it will continue to produce cotton every year?
It'll continue to grow year after year, and it'll set one crop this year, and then it'll move up the stalk and make another crop the next year. As long as you don't disturb it, it'll still be there.
That is unreal. All right. That. Thank you for that. I don't mean to sound ignorant to those of you that grow cotton, but when you grow up in Minnesota, you don't even think about, I mean, you're glad that you got blue jeans. You're glad that you got cotton t-shirts, but you don't think about much about how they grow it.
Well, so, a lot of people that grow cotton may not even realize that it's a perennial and that's the way it works. But
Well, I remember early in my career getting to drive across Texas and other places in the South and see, you know, the cotton harvesting, the bales and things like this, getting done. And wow, it's just, you know, phenomenal to learn about. And so I grew up as on a fishing bait operation. My dad was a wholesaler of leeches for fishing bait. So what a thing I can tell you about this is that there are 653 known species of leeches on the planet. And the greatest concentration of all leeches is in the northern half of Minnesota, thanks to the glaciers that dug out all kinds of little 3-foot, 4-foot deep sloughs and ponds. And the reason this is that these ponds will freeze out every third, fourth year when you get a good hard winter. They'll freeze to the bottom and kill off any fish, because if there's fish, there won't be leeches. And that's why you have the greatest population of leeches on the planet is in the north half of Minnesota.
Learn something new every day. I had no idea.
Isn't that wild? All right, let's get back to the questions, though, because I think this is that's fun. It's always fun to exchange information and teach people something they didn't know they were going to get to know today. This is a leadership podcast. I want to talk about that, Mike, in your world and your role, whether you're making podcasts or you're working with customers, working with farmers, working with your other folks there within your company. What are some of the hurdles you have to overcome from leadership, or what's one of the biggest ones you've had to overcome?
You know, one of the biggest hurdles, and I overcame this early and still have to work on it from time to time. But, you know, growing up and going through school, I always thought I had a great idea and my idea was the best way to do it. And that's how it was going to be. But it took me a little while to realize other people had good ideas too. And just because I could do it this way, that didn't mean it was the only way to do it. Somebody else can do it, get to the same endpoint, going a different route, and need to learn to listen to other ideas and work together more with people. What may be the easiest way for me to do it may not be the easiest way for you to do it, but we always get to the same endpoint. Mm-hmm.
That's humbling.
It is.
That is humbling. That's good. What's been a big win over the course of your career from a leadership perspective?
You know, I've had a lot of opportunities to do a lot of things over my career. I've won a lot of awards and started a lot of different groups and organizations. But thinking about this question, what is the biggest win? And it's going to go back to my time with Extension Service at Mississippi State. And I got to work a lot with the 4-H kids at that time. And we did different contests and practices. We did the land judging contest and a horticulture judging contest, a livestock judging contest. But the biggest win would have to be getting to work with those kids that had no idea what they wanted to do in life, or thought that they knew what they wanted to do, and ended up changing and going to work in agriculture. Some of the kids that I've worked with, I know two of them are vets now, living here locally in the community. One of them's a science teacher at the local high school, but they're all working in the ag industry somewhere, or a lot of them are. And it's great to see them turn into leaders and be out in the community making a difference, and going back to when they were young people, learning the basics of agriculture through a 4-H project.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. You know, I mean, even as you bring that up, I'm thinking about when I got into FFA as a freshman in high school, and growing up in the fishing bait industry was not traditional ag, right? So I didn't have the dairy animals to show like a lot of my friends did. I grew up in a dairy area and a turkey area in Minnesota. I didn't have those things to bring to the county fair. We didn't have cattle. We didn't have pigs. We had some chickens, but not the ones you show at the county fair.
Yeah,
you know. And so I got into an ag class when I was a freshman, and they got me on the poultry judging team. And so we got to go to the poultry judging team, and I don't think I was any good at it, I'll be real honest. But what happened for me is at that event, it wasn't our ag teacher, I think it was his wife that took us there. She let myself and my friend Brent leave the building we were in and walk a few blocks up the street and go to Taco Bell and get lunch on our own. She gave us freedom and right. autonomy to go make our own decisions. And as soon, like we thought we were getting away with everything, right? At that moment, like, this is so cool. We went and had our Taco Bell. We came back. We got the results from the contest. I don't remember what they were. It doesn't matter. But we went back and we went to the ag teacher and we said, when is the next event? When do we get to go?
That's right. And Mark, you hit on something there. It doesn't matter whether you win or lose, as long as you're doing your best. And that's what I always tried to teach the kids. If you're learning something from this, you're accomplishing something. It doesn't matter what your score was or how you placed. Right. Let's learn something while we're doing this. And, you know, we did these different projects, and yeah, we were trying to teach them agriculture while we were doing it. But the biggest lessons that I wanted them to get out of it was leadership, citizenship, how they could go back in the community and be productive citizens. And I think we did a good job accomplishing that when we look back at it.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's so much value in those 4-H and FFA and other youth organizations like this. There's so many valuable lessons that get taught. And it's one of my favorite things to support every year whenever I'm able to is the Blue Jackets Bright Futures program. I don't know if you're familiar with that with FFA, yep. But you know, I remember it was such a big deal when my mom wrote a check, and we didn't have a lot of money. She gave me a check for my FFA jacket. And I remember her handing me that check. I think it was $45 at the time. And she stuffed that check in my chest and she said, "You damn well better wear this thing."
Exactly.
You know, and boy, did I think by the time I was all done with my FFA career, I had three or four FFA jackets, you know, it's such a big deal. So it means a lot to, you know, to know their families that probably maybe struggle a little bit financially, and that now $90 FFA jacket today is a little bit more of a cost. So, man, if I can buy 10 of those a year, I'll do it.
Exactly. Got to support our young people. They're our future.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So, well, good. Hey team, please forgive this quick intrusion into the podcast, but I have a really important announcement that I want everybody to get their earballs on. And that is that we have an upcoming Thriving Leader event coming up August 21st and 22nd. The Thriving Leader is our flagship program. We have run this thing over 135 times across the broad scope of agriculture. Thousands of people have gone through this and our coaching programs, and our public events each year are free. We only run two of these per year because of that. And your next chance to get access is coming up on August 21 and 22. The next one will not be until 2025. So we hope to see you. It's in Kansas City. Head on over to thriving-leader.com. That's thriving-leader.com. You get all the details and to book a meeting to see how you can get free access for you and some of your team coming up at the Thriving Leader in Kansas City, Missouri, August 21st and 22nd, 2024. We'll see you there. So, you know, over the course of our careers, there are people that just inspire us or get us to do things differently or motivate us or whatever. Who's been somebody you've really admired over the course of your career, Mike?
You know, I grew up working cotton, and that I thought cotton was the only crop that we could grow in the South for a long time. But after I went to work for the Extension Service, shortly after that, they came to me and said, we need somebody to be the peanut specialist, and you're the guy. All the peanuts are in your area. We want you to work on peanuts. And I had never been in a peanut field in my life. Worked in peanuts for about 10 years and think we put together a really great peanut program while I was here. But I couldn't have done any of that without the help of Dr. John Beasley. He was a peanut specialist at the University of Georgia at the time. I picked up the phone out of the blue, gave John a call, and he was more than willing to help me out. Anytime I had a question, he was right there to help work me through it. He even came over and went through the field calls with me and helped me understand what was going on, what I was looking at. He came and did some grower meetings for me. Later on, John retired from the University of Georgia and went to Auburn, where he was department head for probably about 10 years there, maybe longer. But John's recently retired, and I can still pick up the phone and give John a call today and just to talk SEC football, or we can get back into the peanut field and figure out what we need to be doing in the peanut field. But never once did I see John look down on somebody or think that was a dumb question. You ask John a question and he's going to do his best to answer it. And if he didn't know, he would tell you he didn't know, but he would find out and get back with you. But John was a great guy, still is a great guy, and would do anything for anybody.
That's cool. That sounds like a great guy. What book recommendation did you bring for us, Mike? What should people be reading?
You know, I don't have a lot of time to read books. That's one thing I want to try to do a lot more. But one book that I read a couple of years ago that really made an impression on me, it's called Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willeken and Leif Babin. And I may have butchered those authors' names, but and they were two Navy SEALs that served in Iraq. And the book talks about their ordeal in Iraq, their daily battles that they had to go through. But it also talks about the leadership that had to be employed with the SEALs in order to make sure everybody came home every day. If there wasn't leadership and people doing what they needed to do, they could all been lost over there. But they do a great job of converting that to business life and how you have to own the decisions you make, how it's the responsibility of the leader to make sure a project gets from point A to point B. And if it works, that's great. Take credit for it. If it doesn't work, own that, learn from it and be ready to move on next time. Don't dwell on the failures, learn from them and do better next time. But a great book. Encourage everybody to get a copy of that one.
Yeah, that's a great book. That is a great book. I've read it. I've listened to the audiobook. They have another one called The Dichotomy of Leadership, and Jocko really has positioned him and his company really. In fact, I mean, we run a leadership coaching company, and even if it's competitive, I don't care. It's one that I want to go to. There are very few programs that I'm super impressed with that I think, well, I really would benefit by investing the money and going to that one. And he runs a battlefield type program similar to battlefield leadership, which I know a lot of people in the agriculture industry have been through. A lot of leaders anyway have been through. But so Jocko and his group at Echelon Front actually take you out to, say, like the Battle of Gettysburg. They'll take you out to Custer's Last Stand and actually go through what happened and where decisions were made. And what must have been happening, because these things are so well documented and looking at it from a leadership perspective. So that's one that I would pay to go to for sure.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I didn't realize they were doing all of that.
Yeah, they have some really cool programs like that. And they're not terrible. I mean, they're expensive, but they're not out of reach for most people and most companies. So,
right.
So what did you do to keep yourself productive and keep your energy up throughout the day, Mike?
Well, you know, with seven kids, you stay active whether you want to or not. You know, I try to get up and get going and get things moving early and trying to get everything done so I can be with the kids in the afternoon. They're all involved in different activities, and I want to be there as much as I can. So I can't can't be there with them and go to football and basketball games if I still have work to do. So I try to make sure I am as productive as I possibly can be during the day so I can get things wrapped up and ready to go to a ball game that night. So
yeah. That's got to be tough to balance all the, I mean, that's a lot of work, number one, just to have a kid and then take that times seven. And you've got all your kids between 13 and 18. And
yeah.
How do you guys
there's never a dull moment.
How do you keep it straight?
Very careful planning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a little bit of a setup, that question, right? Because it really does, when we talk about intentional leadership, right? We talk about what it takes to be intentional. What I don't think most people understand is the level of work that is required to be an intentional leader.
That's right.
Does that make sense?
Perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Things that I try to do that, you know, it works for me. It may not work for everybody, but I'm up by 4:30 or 5 o'clock every morning, whether I set an alarm clock or not. And I'm in the office within about 15 minutes after that. I start off going through emails that I haven't finished up from the day before and get that knocked out. You know, I can spend time doing that kind of stuff before the phone starts ringing. And, you know, I'm in the central time zone, but a lot of people I deal with are in the Eastern time zone. So when they get to work at 8 o'clock, my phone will start ringing at 7 o'clock. So, if I can get up early and get a lot of stuff knocked out before that phone starts ringing, that frees me up during the rest of the day. And, you know, another thing that I've learned, I try really hard to check emails 3 times a day. I used to have notifications on my computer, and every time I'd get an email, it would pop up. And if I'm writing a manuscript or trying to go through some research data, that distracts me. Even if I don't open the email right then, it distracts me, and I have to, okay, where was I at? And if I do open the email, well, then I have to really go back and figure out where I was. So I set up 3 times during the day that I take about 20 minutes each time. And I go back and catch up on emails then. You know, I probably get 200 or 300 emails a day, and probably 85% of them are junk. I don't even need to open them. Well, I can go through all of them really quick and hit delete, and then open the ones I need to open and respond to those at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, that may not work for everybody. I know some roles you need an immediate response to some emails, but if somebody really needs me, they know they can pick up the phone and get my attention a lot quicker that way than through an email. But that's some things that I do to try to stay more productive.
You bet. Well, you know, when I think about where a lot of people get stuck, it's in this idea that they have bought into over time, which is, I think, you know, that they think that they need to respond right away, or they got to be right on top of it, or if we don't have this back within 30 seconds. And you might have had a boss along the way that trained that into you because that's how they ran their life. But that doesn't mean they were a good example.
That's right.
That doesn't mean they were an intentional leader, right? You may have just been following a well-intended but unintentional leader, you know, and then you just picked up some of their bad habits. So it's worth, I think, doing a self-evaluation for folks. I love the idea of doing the 3 20 or 30 minute blocks throughout the day to go back and catch up on the emails and catch up on the text messages. Because, man, if I leave my phone sitting over here and I can see this, you know, these things, you know, lighting up in front of me right now, you know, here's, you know, something from the teacher, you know, whatever, coming, you know, from my kid's teacher coming through. Oh, I could go look at that. Oh, what was I doing? I'm talking to Mike.
Exactly.
You know, it's very distracting. So minimizing distractions, right? And then blocking in time to focus on things. I think that's very intentional. And one other thing I would just add to that I want people to start to chew on a little bit. One of the things we teach at our Thriving Leader Program is a concept called, I get to train others how to treat me. So at the end of the day, you can only serve others to the degree that you have the capacity to serve. And if for most of your career, and this is what we find with a lot of our clients, a lot of us have been giving away all of our time, giving away all of our energy unintentionally. We haven't designed a protocol, maybe like you have, on on how that gets to work throughout the day. So in some cases, we get to say, hey, listen, I check email at 8 o'clock in the morning, at noon, and at 3:30. And if it's outside one of those times, give me a call. If it's urgent, right? And that's what you're saying basically is that, you know, it looks something like that. And now I have said, okay, and this is how it works. So that's how you get a hold of me. And I've trained others now effectively how to treat me. And that's you get to experience that, because otherwise, how do you keep it all straight? Which is my original question.
And that's exactly right. Now, You know, I will admit I do get some emails from time to time that I answer in between there. If it's something I know is coming, or if I'm not really busy doing something I have to pay attention to, yeah, that's fine. But when I'm working on something I need to stay focused on, I try to shut that down and stay focused on the task at hand. And you know, I'm going to give my age out a little bit here. When I first got started in this industry, we didn't know what a cell phone was. I would get up and go to work and work all day traveling across the state. And I'd get back to the office about 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'd have to go show my boss what I did that day. And we'd talk then, and we never missed anything. We didn't know there was time, but we had so much more time to actually get stuff done when we didn't have all the stuff helping us do our job.
That is a very good reflection. We think we got all these tools to make us more efficient, but are we really more efficient?
Yeah. I wonder sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. All right. Well, Mike, what's something on your list as you think about being intentional for yourself? What's something you want to improve on in this coming year?
You know, we kind of already mentioned it. You asked a question about a book I recommended, and I said I didn't have a lot of time to read, but mm-hmm. You know, we have time to do what we want to do. We have to make time to do certain things, and I'm going to make it a goal this year to do some more reading. Now, I may start off only 10 or 15 minutes a day, but we can all find 10 or 15 minutes if it's something we want to do. And I think I'm missing out on some stuff. I do need to spend more time reading. And you know, I spend a lot of time reading journal articles and research reports and that kind of stuff, but I need to read other stuff, read stuff for fun or stuff to help me, not just reading job related information. So
yeah, that's a big one.
That's what I want to work on.
Yep, that's a big one. I had a friend of mine years ago used to work with us that he just said 10 pages. How long does it take to read 10 pages of a book? You know, take that book you recommended, right? It's about 250 pages, right? So if you're to go in there, 250, 300 pages is your average personal development book. Read 10 pages a day. In a month, you got one done. You can do 12 a year at that pace.
That's right.
So most people are sitting here saying, I don't have time. Everybody's got, you got time, right? You're just doing other things with the time.
Exactly.
Right. So we got to
set your priorities and do what's most important. And I can watch a football game all day Saturday. I got plenty of time to do that, but, I could spend 10 minutes of that football game reading a book and still find out what happened in the football game.
Mm-hmm. And I would recommend to people listening to Mike, you know, as this is one of the big excuses I get from a lot of people, man, I don't have a lot of time to read. And I get it, you know, and so maybe they're taking in audiobooks and podcasts. I hope they're listening to podcasts. That's why they listen to this one or to the Dirt podcast. There's another plug for you, but there's something about sitting down with a paper book and putting it in your hands and actually taking time. I have been doing a 1-year study Bible halfway through that book, right? Halfway through the Bible, going page by page. And it's just something about turning a few of those pages every night before I go to bed that puts me into a better state as I'm about to go to sleep.
That's right. And you're not worried about anything else at that time. If you've got a book in your hand, you're focusing on that and not worried about what else is going on. You don't have a phone with different alerts coming in and all that kind of stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing. I think one of the worst things for our brain is to be sucked into the YouTube shorts and the TikToks and the emails and, you know, text messages and all that stuff right before you go to bed. In fact, all the biohacking gurus, the experts in personal health will tell you for that last hour before bed, we should not be looking at devices.
That's exactly right. And you know, I try to get my kids to do that, but, that's another battle. So,
yeah,
they think they have to have that phone at all times or watching the television at all times. But there's a lot of wisdom in that. Turn it off and wind down, get ready for bed.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, we had our oldest is a type 1 diabetic. And so about time she turned 9, there was an app that would sync up between the phone. And if we had the phone, it would project her blood glucose out to our phones and we could start to watch her blood sugar from wherever we are. And right now she's in 10th grade and she's in high school for the rest of the day. And I can go on my phone right now. I know exactly what her blood sugar is, you know, so it allowed us to feel more at ease. And so she got a phone earlier. And then her little sister, who's only about a year and a half, 2 years younger than her, you know, she got one about the same age she did. And that was one of those mistakes I know that I made as a parent. I would not get them a phone as early as I did. especially knowing what I now know about the mental health and what's going on with a lot of teenagers and the content that they're getting, frankly, assaulted with. So a more intentional move, my 7-year-old son, he's just about 8, and he's just going to get to wait longer. And I'm just, as the dad, I'm going to be the gateway, and I'm just going to say no. Like, not no forever, but no for longer, because I'm going to let his, like, it's okay if he has to borrow a friend's phone or a friend's mom's phone, or there's no pay phones they can go to call us anymore, but right. But that's what we had to do.
That's it. But today everybody's got one, and you know, I understand kids feel left out if they don't have the phone, but, there's a lot of bad things associated with them as well. And I'm like you, I wish I had waited a little longer getting some of those devices.
Well, I tell you what, man, from a training perspective, just a people development perspective, obviously we're working with a lot of young people that are in their mid-20s or so after university. And so we're dealing with a whole different set of, we actually have to change our approach to learning, because they've been attached to this thing for so long. It's very hard to get them off of that. So we're having to create now short form content to teach leadership principles and ideas and put that in front of them in the form of a TikTok to get them to learn.
Yeah.
Right. We can't do coaching like we used to do. We can't sit down and have a conversation like this for an hour, like you and I can, but if I put it on a short form video, then it actually gets their attention. So it's gotta
do what gets their attention, I guess.
Old
school. I'd rather sit down and have a conversation, but that's harder to do these days.
What I'm noticing is what I believe to be the effects of nobody having to deal with delayed gratification.
Yep.
And I think, man, if I can teach my kids, and this is what I'm working on right now, my oldest daughter got her job at Chick-fil-A. she's loving it, man. Make $10 an hour. $10 an hour out there taking, you know, selling chicken sandwiches, and she's just having a great time with it. She's feeling good. She's 15 years old. She's making money. And I said, this is what we're going to do. So we're taking the first 10% of that money goes into your give account, right? So where are you going to tie the two? And then the next 40% that goes into your savings. She's like, what am I saving for? I'm like, you're just saving. She's like, I want to save up and get an iPad. I'm like, well, when you get to $1,000 in your account at a minimum, then we'll talk about what you can do next. But you're still going to be putting half your paycheck away every single month. So how you want to allocate your spending money, that's completely up to you. So if you want to save up for an iPad, I suggest you save the half that you get to spend.
Well, that's something that we don't teach our kids well enough is how to save and spend money. You know, my oldest just started college, and he went out and bought his first truck last week, but he had to pay for that himself. He got out and worked and got the money himself, but dad bought him the first one, and that one wasn't good enough. So he had to work to get his second one. It'd been a lot easier if he had been saving money all along instead of having to come up with it all at one time, but he made it work.
That's good. Well, as long as you got it done. So, all right, Mike, just your last question is to kind of bring it in for a landing here today. I always like to ask people when we get time within the show parameters, you know, what vulnerability is a big issue, I think, in the leadership space and different opinions on it. I'm just curious from your perspective on how does vulnerability help create an intentional work environment, whether it's for where you work or environments that you've worked in?
You know, vulnerability, I'll get it out here in a minute. That was kind of a bad word when I first started my career. You didn't want anybody to know what your weaknesses were or what was going on in your personal space. And I think we've kind of got over that a good bit, and it helps us work with each other better. If we know what's going on within your life, I mean, you may be having a bad day at home and having a bad day at work, having a bad day for some other reason. If we have a relationship so that we can communicate, it helps us all work together better. If I know you're having a bad day today, maybe we can wait till tomorrow to make this project happen, or go through this question that really doesn't have to be answered right now. Let's wait till we're both in the right frame of mind to address this problem. You know, if we let our guard down and get to know people a little better, I'm not talking about we have to know every little aspect of their life, but you know, we've both been talking today. You've got six kids. I've got seven kids. Knowing that, we're able to communicate a little better and have some common ground here. If I didn't know that, you'd think I was just running around every night going to ball games because that's what I wanted to do. So let your guard down a little bit. Let people understand what's going on. If you've got a really bad problem in your life, there's nothing wrong with telling people, say, hey, I've got something going on. I may need a little space here for a few minutes. So nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah. Well, I think it allows us all to just be more human with each other.
That's right. You know, and I tell people all the time, in my job, everything goes back to relationships. If I've got a relationship with a grower or with a customer, I'm a lot more likely to have success with that person. If we can talk about the football game Friday night and talk about how the kids are doing, then we can get down to business and those relationships go a long way. If I need help getting something done, I've got people I can call that can make it happen, just because of our relationships. And, that vulnerability, plays a big role into that.
You betcha. Absolutely. Well, Mike, this has been a fun conversation today, man. I appreciate the chance to hang out with you for half an hour and get to know you a little bit more and talk leadership, talk cotton and leeches and kids and all the good stuff in between.
Hey, I really enjoyed it. I appreciate you having me.
Likewise. All right. Thanks for being here.
I hope today's episode brought you a great deal of value about what it takes to lead life and lead in this industry with intention. If you want to go deeper on the topic of leading with intention, I encourage you to head on over to intentionaltoolbox.com and get the 7 free tools that will help you to lead your life in all areas with a greater deal of intention. That's intentionaltoolbox.com. And finally, if this message resonated today, if there's something in here that you got value from, I promise you there's someone else in your life who also would get value from this. So please share the episode, share the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe.